I want to ask you, Rich, I thought you had a really interesting viewpoint on Obamacare in your column. So I'd ask you to share what you think about this. Is, you know, the real sort of linchpin of this whole conflict that's going on right now is Obamacare. And how are you feeling about that?
Well, my background, actually, back, I actually worked for Governor Weld of Massachusetts as director of adolescent health during a period of the very earliest health care reform. And that sort of predates Mitt Romney on health care reform. And I wrote an op-ed at when Obama introduced it and said, he needs to learn how to speak Republican. Obamacare is really a very Republican response to the health care crisis. It's been completely poorly communicated. And then it was stick it in the eye of the moderate Republicans that are willing to sign on, and Democrats rolled it in a partisan manner for their own purposes. But in a nutshell, if you want me to talk about Obamacare, it's essentially, if I would articulate in Republican terms, you're asking everybody to be responsible for their health care at some level. We have universal health care. This has not been articulated. It's called the emergency room. Anyone, by law, can go into an emergency room. When they do, the bill starts at $1,000. And when I did health care in Massachusetts, we'd have whole families coming in for, well, checkups. The hospitals were happy to take them in. They could bill it to the federal government or to the state government, and the patients weren't getting any continuity of care. So, of course, it makes sense to ask everybody to pay something. And if you're not, then we should have a proactive way of approaching this, which will actually control cost in the long run. I don't think that what was hammered together was a bit of a mess in Obamacare, but the inability to articulate it in a way that would appeal is exactly, it's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, of communicating things to the group that's going to have the hardest time making the transition would have been a much smarter move. Instead, they said, this is progressive, everybody deserves the right to health care. Those are progressive ways of describing something that do not win over traditionals. But the fact is, it's a very responsible way of asking everybody to pay for their own health care. And let's all be responsible, and let's be proactive and avoid the emergency room costs that were bankrupting the government. And I predict that in 20 years, the same way that Senator Rubio defended Social Security for his mother and his response to the president, in 30 years, you'll have whatever party it will be called at the time. I don't know if the Republicans will last that long. But whatever party at the time will say on the air, this is why we have to protect the health care that we all have. And it will be something else we'll be arguing for.
No, I think if you look at history, you can see that there are always people with their foot on the brake. These are conservatives. Mm-hmm. And there are always people with their foot in the gas. And these are liberals. And over time, the liberals win, from slavery to women's rights to gay rights to the social safety net to Social Security, which was brought in with, you know, all kinds of hullabaloos back in the 30s and now has an 80%+ approval rating among the American public. Even the right wing argues for Social Security and don't touch Social Security and so forth, and that we will likely be doing the same thing for, you know, our healthcare system in another probably 5-10 years.
With the one exception that though progressive policies have pushed all these agendas, they haven't really found a way to pay for them. So when the conservatives say, hey, let's figure out a way to pay for it, that's an absolutely fair question, the debt and the financial crisis. The sad part, none of these debates is anybody really tackling those costs, but that's going to be a collaborative solution. It will not be a win-lose solution, but I think broadly, you know, there's a broader interest for everybody to take care of everybody's health care and to make sure that everybody is out of poverty, for example. These are just things that, just even if you're the most selfish, greedy business, it makes sense for that to happen in the country. So I think these are going to move forward, but we're going to have to find ways to pay for it.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. All right, so I see we have a question from Beal Lowe. So, Beal?
Yes, I'm calling up. You talked about the strategies in the gay rights, finding conservative arguments where there was find a union with conservatives. What would you suggest with regard to environment or climate change? What conservative arguments would appeal?
It's interesting,
you want to take a stab at that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think that recently working in the state of Michigan with a group that is protecting 20% of the fresh water in the United States, which is the Great Lakes. It's an amazing statistic. And when I was making a case to conservative investors, for example, to invest in this effort, it's very easy to talk about things that relate to them. What is the future of these waters to your family? What is the future of these waters to the shipping industry? What are the what is the cost of a dirty, you know, there are these just very tangible business arguments. But it is interesting in talking with environmentalists, the resistance to speaking in those terms. They feel like that monetizing it kind of dumbs it down. That would be one quick example. Water to me is actually one of the best arguments of the environmental movement that I think it has not made. The fact that we have to carry water into our homes now and bottle it, which is a great pollutant with the plastic. If we could talk about just having what it would be like to have clean water in your homes, again, that's a very might sound very selfish to an environmentalist, but that's very real and very practical to a person. And all the things you'd need to change to get to that point would be environmental solutions. So I think there's a lot of solutions along those lines. As far as climate change is not going to be solved until we use collaborative models, and that's why I'm talking about win-win, including globally. Right now, whoever signs on to climate change first is a loser. The United States signs onto a protocol, it loses. So the lobbying effort for the United States to do these things first will never work because the business community will never sign on to it. We're going to have to find ways to work globally with all nations and say, how do you win? How does India win in this? How does China win in this? How does the United States win? Until we get that going, it doesn't make sense, honestly, for the United States to just proactively change all of its policies, and the business community won't sign on. So I would be making more of those arguments, conservative arguments for environmentalism, and also collaborative arguments for climate change globally.